the floor, crack the door, what do I see? Strange kid standing there, who is that in the mirror? Could it be me? Someone opens the bedroom door, somebody wanders the hall. Someone's crossing my kitchen floor. Wasn't there somebody I loved who lived here before?
Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Friday, the 28th of September, our last panel for this month, and we thank you very much for being with us. Quick note about the music. We were listening to Madeline Peyrou's new album, Anthem. She's playing at the Egg in Albany on the 2nd of October and at Infinity Hall in Hartford, Connecticut on the 6th, and at the Academy of Music Theater in Northampton on the 9th. So you can find out more by going to MadelinePeyrou.com. And we also have the playlist on our website, WAMC.org. Good morning, everybody. We have a lot to talk about today. Obviously, yesterday was a huge news day. And we are, I think most of us are still shaking our heads a little bit. So we will try to figure out why our heads are shaking, and if we can dislodge those pieces from our brain and maybe collect them and put them together and build something. I don't know what.
my hands are shaking, too, and in addition to my head. So.
Yeah, that's I agree with you, Aaron, very much so. All right. Well, let me introduce everybody. We have a full group this morning, and I couldn't be more delighted. I'll tell you the story of how this came about in just a moment. Vice President for Editorial Development at the New York Press Association, Judy Patrick, is here. Good morning, Judy.
Good morning, Joe and all.
Political consultant Libby Post is with us. Good morning, Libby.
Good morning.
Albany Law School professor Sarah Rogerson, who directs the Immigration and Law Clinic, is with us. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning.
David Soares, the Albany County District Attorney, is with us. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
And Siena College economics professor Aaron Pasitti is here.
Good morning, Aaron.
Very
morning.
Nice to have you all here. I put out a call this morning. I just wanted a full house because we wanted to talk about this issue. And I put out a call to everybody, and pretty much everybody said yes. So we have a full group, and I couldn't be more thrilled because we have a lot to talk about. Obviously, we're trying to figure out what happened yesterday. When we talk about this, we are, of course, speaking about the Kavanaugh hearings and the of what happened yesterday. And we began the day, the hearing began the day, with the accuser of Brett Kavanaugh, Christine Blasey Ford, who took questions from Democratic senators, and then from the prosecutor that was hired by the Republicans, took a series of questions. She was very clear and determined, 100% sure of her story and of what happened. And at noontime, if you looked in social media, people were saying that just was a very compelling and clear argument as to and of great concern of why perhaps this man should not be on the highest court in the country.
She was grace under pressure.
Why are you...
I don't know.
Let's try that.
Okay. She was grace under pressure.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I listened to most of it because I was, you know, working. And,
nobody else was, right?
I know. I had to, you know, there are campaigns. And, you know.
All right.
But, you know, her voice... I wish her voice was a little stronger. She sounded a little young, but when you saw her, clearly that wasn't the case. But she was so clear, so definite, so solid in her convictions of what was going on and what had happened to her. And you contrast that with Brett Kavanaugh.
Well, and then, so then Brett Kavanaugh came on, and I don't think, and please, anyone in this room, correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, we were watching pretty much all of the coverage yesterday, and I don't think anybody was expecting what we got, which was the playbook, which was to I mean, I understand being defiant. I understand being, you know, of trying to defend your reputation and your honor. But the belligerence, the attacks on the Democratic senators, as well as the entire process, calling it a national disgrace, and the refusal to answer any of the questions by the Democratic senators posed by the Democratic senators, and also just the filibustering that went on over the questions, I was surprised that was the tactic. We can talk a little bit about the use of the prosecutor who was used extensively during Dr. Ford's testimony, but when it came to Brett Kavanaugh, I believe she only asked questions twice, and then the Republican, after Lindsey Graham blew his stack, then everybody went to town. So let's go around the room. Sarah, what'd you make of it?
Well, every single survivor who was watching this knew exactly what they saw in Brett Kavanaugh. And the problem is, we're baffled by this strategy. I think it just shows that he's being enabled by other abusers, mm-hmm. because yeah. they don't understand why this strategy is so off. They're so tone deaf that they think that this bluster is going to play well. Well, and maybe it will with their base, you know, it's working.
So it's hard to believe. And I said this just minutes to my colleagues minutes into his comments yesterday when he made the point of telling us that he wrote this by himself. And an assistant. I thought, is that Donald Trump? Because, I mean, right. we started to hear. I mean, and to your point about by other predators, it seemed to me to be. I was really shocked by many things, and I'm hoping David will talk to this about this. But Sarah, you too, of course. The if anything backfires here, and for whatever reason he is not advanced to the Supreme Court, a case can be made, can it not, that if let's put aside everything else, which is really hard to do, but let's put aside everything else, is this the temperament of a guy you want in the Supreme Court?
Exactly. And that's what the American Bar Association is right. asking this morning. It's unprecedented that the American Bar Association, the largest political body for lawyers, all lawyers in the country, is asking the Senate to hold off. That's astonishing. And it says a lot. That body doesn't move quickly. That body takes 50 years to put together a resolution about that's domestic right. violence. And overnight, they flipped the statement. It's not even on their Twitter feed yet, I checked. So they that signals to me a sense of urgency by lawyers all across the country that we see something that is wrong.
Understanding that this was first of all, it was a disastrous. I thought it was disastrous for Mr. Kavanaugh. But if this were
but not disastrous enough to not get him confirmed.
I think that if this were in a court of law, you know you have a slippery defendant. But what you do is if your defendant decides to take the stand, and if you're the prosecutor, you would want to bring out exactly what you saw in this person yesterday as he testified. Mm-hmm. You'd want to bring out the angry, the arrogant, defiant person that you saw. And the reason why you want to bring that out is you want to show in your closing, you want to be able to close and show the jury that if this man is able to walk into this courtroom and put on this kind of show, imagine what he's like in private. And you're
with a couple of drinks in him.
With a couple of drinks in him. So
you had to wonder whether or not he'd had a couple of drinks before he
walked
in.
I won't go that far, but
You know, he acted totally out of control.
I mean, this was an opportunity for him to perhaps demonstrate how he would perform under immense pressure, but a lot of Supreme Court cases are important, and it seems like he failed that test miserably and just kind of went on a rant, which is something you might expect to see on Fox News. You might expect mm-hmm. to see it out of Donald Trump, but in a setting like this, that level, that tone, and that level of, like you said, anger and arrogance is just not. Who's advising him to do this? Is anybody advising him?
Donald Trump.
Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, he's been at the White House every day for the last week. Yeah. So,
many people are smarter than Donald Trump, and I would say Brett Kavanaugh is one of those people, so he probably should say, okay, thank you for the advice. I'm going to adopt a much more sober approach, no pun intended.
I was struck by how opposite it was to his, and I'm going to try to not use this word, but I'll say performance, because I feel it's not applicable here, but by his interview on Fox News. I mean, if you compare the quieter, but the stumbling and without the rage of that interview compared to what we saw, I mean, if it were flipped, it would have made more sense. Like, I'm going to be in a TV interview and I'm going to tell you what I think, and then when I'm before this committee to decide my fate as a justice for the Supreme Court, that maybe I could keep my act together.
I would just have to say, in this instance, he's between a rock and a hard place, because after his performance on Fox, there was much criticism by Donald Trump leveled at him they felt that he was too soft. And so going into yesterday's hearing, he had to play to an audience of one, but he also had to play the game such that he wouldn't alienate any of the Republican senators that were on that panel.
You know, I have to say that, from a human perspective, the morning hearing was incredibly painful. And many times I said, I just can't continue listening to this, because I was listening to it too. But I realized you have to do it. I mean, as a citizen, you have to listen to it. And then in the afternoon, I'm listening and I'm thinking, I became actually scared. I mean, it was this incredible rage and power coming at me. And this is one of the reasons sexual assault victims don't come forward. Mm-hmm. She wanted to remain anonymous with Dianne Feinstein. She didn't ever want to deal with Kavanaugh. She's afraid. And this is so much the dynamic in our society today. Sometimes it's overt, like it was yesterday. But it's there, and it's something every woman or every person of low power is afraid of.
When we talked about this earlier in the week, we all predicted that everyone would try their hardest not to make this another Anita Hill situation. And it seemed up until about 1 o'clock we were halfway there. And then I don't know what happened.
Well,
yes and no, too. I mean, she's white.
Yep.
She presented herself differently. Some of the reaction was she's more credible because she's vulnerable.
Yes, and I guess, and you're right. I guess I'm talking about in the behavior by the senators, which of course they deferred to the prosecutor.
They chickened out. Yep. They didn't want to have to ask her any questions. I mean, this was Kavanaugh's performance or response was, the epitome and the exemplification of what happens when you really challenge white male privilege in this country. He feels entitled, that this is his, that he should be on the Supreme Court, blah, 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 and how dare some woman bring up something that may have happened. Who knows, right? We don't know. We think it did.
I couldn't agree with her.
I believe her, but he is just totally outraged that his elite, rich, white male privilege has now been challenged. And that's what the problem was with all of those Republican senators. They didn't want to show that, so they had a woman ask questions instead.
It was I couldn't agree with you more, because that entitlement came out. I mean, it just mm-hmm. I mean, it's just the how many times did we hear about Yale, how many times did we hear about the basketball team, mm-hmm. the football team, the I worked my butt off. He used that line many, many times. I mean,
I know there have been people, because I've certainly read a lot about this over the last 24 hours, people just making comments about her performance, her appearance, the sound of her voice. And, I don't know if it's because we have a culture now that's so indoctrinated in watching made-up television mm-hmm. that they think that everything that's on television, is scripted. But she's a real human being. The voice that you heard is her real voice. And what she testified to was her experience. And so this idea that she should have done this or she should have done that, it's just ridiculous. As a prosecutor, you don't dress, you're not staging a play.
Right.
You're getting at the truth, and you're trying to put the person who was in the position to be able to articulate with the most clarity that truth, you're asking that individual questions. And so I was very taken aback by the response. Of course, coming from, you know, the tribal pack that's out there, and how quickly they came for her.
You know, there's a new poll out that 48% of white evangelicals will still support Kavanaugh even if he's sexually assaulted Ford. This is the base we're talking about.
But Roe, you know, Roe is there. That's what they want.
Right. That's all they want.
But they will also tolerate a man who talks to other men, telling them that he grabs women's private parts.
That's right.
So
that's right.
They'll have to live with that.
Yes,
because that's what Roe is about. It's
right.
about
women,
autonomy and,
right.
and personal, personal autonomy, control over your own body. That's what it's really about.
So we're going to go take a break here, but in a few moments, the committee is going to. All right. Well, so I was going to say I was going to ask whether you thought that Jeff Flake was going to vote yes, and they just have announced that Jeff Flake is going to vote to confirm Kavanaugh. I was gonna give you
out of the committee.
Let's guess.
Well, his mouth is no longer where his ethics are.
Anybody watch Lucy and Charlie Brown in a football?
Yeah, right.
Okay,
right.
Come on. I mean, this idea.
I'm gonna hold you there. Okay, we're gonna take a break. When we come back, we'll commiserate some more, and we'll welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. I'm expecting a big stack. We'll be right back.
It's easy to see things going wrong now. It's easy to wallow in a sad song. It's easy to cry over all that's gone now. But I believe we must carry on. I hear you saying our best days are past us. I've seen you walking through the rubble and stone. Yes, I know there's a list of disasters, but time.
I will admit we were watching television during the break. There was some very compelling video of, it's live, and Senator Flake is trying to get out of an elevator to go to the Judiciary Committee hearing and is being confronted by protesters. And he is just looking rather shocked as people are asking him a series of very hard questions, which he does not seem to obviously want to respond to or have an answer to. As we mentioned right before the break, he has it's been announced that he will vote to confirm Brett Kavanaugh, and there was some question as to whether that would be the case. Welcome back. We have a whole bunch of letters from people. So does anybody want to comment on this before we go to letters?
No, he's still trapped, just for the record.
Yeah, I think he may be going to another floor now.
He has escaped. But for anyone who believes that Senator Flake is putting his political career behind him, you're terribly mistaken. Because if he were, in fact, retiring and moving away from all of this, he would have had the courage to make the decision that he made. But this signifies to me that he still has aspirations.
Well, anybody else want to say anything about that?
Just okay. Of course. Of course it does.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
This is how it works.
Right. Yep. But I would think just the opposite, David, that if he had political aspirations and he wants the primary Trump, God forbid if Trump is still president, in 2020, and that he needs to be able to sway Republican women who are disgusted by what's going on. And so voting against Kavanaugh would have been the key to do that.
That's true. That's true.
So who knows?
All right. So let's. We have a lot of letters, so let's do get to as many of these as we can. Willard says, Kavanaugh doth protest too much, methinks. It was deja vu, Clarence Thomas versus Anita Hill all over again. Kavanaugh played the innocent outrage, but he revealed his guilt by overplaying it. Stop me when you want to comment here. Jim says, I don't fully understand the denial of an FBI investigation that they believe he's innocent. Am I wrong, or will the reps have most of November, all of December, and right up until January 2nd to pass another nominee, even if this one fails? Is it just the optics for the midterm elections?
Yeah, that's what I have not been able to understand. So if this candidate withdraws, why not just put up another conservative candidate?
Trump cannot accept losing at all, period. Right. And that's what this is all about. And plus, you remember, this man was not on the radar at all throughout these proceedings. He came on the radar when someone finally started reading his decisions, and they realized that, boy, this particular judge, he believes a lot in executive authority and immunity. So he became Trump's favorite go-to person.
Matt writes, I believe Dr. Ford is telling the truth and Judge Kavanaugh is lying. Judge Kavanaugh has been exposed to and studied all types of defense techniques and strategies, including from those truly innocent. What we saw yesterday was theater, a fine-tuned performance that incorporated all he has learned to convince wavering Republican senators that 17-year-old Brett Kavanaugh did not assault 15-year-old Christine Blasey Ford in a drunken stupor, cheered on from today's sidelines by a self-admitted sexual predator president. The laughter young Christine heard during her assault is now echoing loudly in the chambers of the Judiciary Committee from its Republican members, except now it's our democracy and values as a nation that is under assault.
You know, the question that I wish that they had put to Brett Kavanaugh yesterday is whether or not he would have felt comfortable allowing his own daughters to go to the school that he attended and be around guys like him. I mean, if you read the yearbook, you would be so troubled as a parent. I'm also wondering whether or not Mr. Kavanaugh would allow his own children to read that yearbook.
Yeah, I pulled out my high school yearbooks last night and flipped through them and saw my Libby, you were saying in the break, you were a member of a UN team.
Mm-hmm, the UN Club.
I was in We the People, of course.
Yeah, that's the Model Congress.
Yeah, Model. So, right. And I'm reading the comments, and I needed to remind myself of what it really meant to be an American in high school, because I just, you see what's written, you see what he had in his bio, maybe college, but high school, and even in college, that is unacceptable. So I also pulled out my college yearbooks, and I went to Hillsdale College, which is a conservative and increasingly more conservative, independent liberal arts school in rural Michigan. And there's just, the comparison was stark. And I don't know why I needed to remind myself, but I did. I think because on a grand stage like this, you see these things pulled out as normal. It's just normal. This is just what boys do. It isn't.
No. And, you know, I graduated before he did. I graduated in 76. And you go through my high school yearbook, and there was none of this sort of stuff. There was no, you know, targeting of women like that, like they did with Renati. You know, and it's just inappropriate behavior. And it's part of the culture of these Jesuit, Catholic, all-boys high schools. It just is, because I experienced that when I did my UN Club stuff in high school.
The only thing that was offensive in my yearbook was the color of my sweater and my Jerry curls.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure.
Wow.
How big was the fro? Was it dirty?
I don't even have any of those friends anymore because they let me wear that sweater.
Yeah.
Awful.
I borrowed a tie for my dad for my senior picture. All right. And I don't know. I just went into his closet and I took a tie. And it's not until the yearbook comes out that I realize, and this is my father, God love him, God rest his soul, and it's pointed out to me that in the tie there's a like a horseshoe, and then there's a screw in the middle of it.
A horseshoe and a screw.
So it says screw you on the tie in like a very beautiful pattern.
So you did go to a school.
Yeah.
Like that.
Right. That's what happens when you raid dad's wardrobe.
That's more of an anti-establishment statement.
I didn't even notice Georgetown it. Prep I didn't statement. Even notice it, and no, I don't think anyone in the school noticed it. It wasn't until I showed my dad, and he was like, "Oh, for Christ's sake!"
Until the FBI did a background check on you.
Yes, my father, who worked for the federal government, I will note. Clarence on the about the panel says, "I agree with Kavanaugh's conclusion of the proceedings being a national disgrace. He was evasive with answers and inappropriate in demeanor and refused at least 9 times to express a desire in FBI investigation allegations. It's clear that the FBI investigates without making conclusions, but lacking all pertinent data prevents making best possible conclusions. Charles writes, I listened to the Senate confirmation hearings yesterday. I found Dr. Ford's testimony to be believable. She did her best to answer all the questions. Judge Kavanaugh was contrite and combative at times. He appeared to be overwhelmed, avoiding the questions. He resorted to statements about how hard he has worked for his accomplishments, as if it negated any past transgressions. He appeared to me as an angry frat boy who had been caught.
Absolutely. Yes.
Sounds about right.
That's absolutely correct.
Yeah.
You know what I found stunning is the number of people who said, oh, I found her very believable, very credible, but then they wouldn't believe that her when she said she thought it, she believed 100% it was Judge Kavanaugh. So they found her credible on many things except that one point.
That is so demeaning, right? I mean, think about this. Like, I can tell you, and I remember her name. I will not mention her name. I can tell you it was Spandau Ballet. This much is true.
Mm-hmm.
I was rejected. Right, I had to do that long walk of shame from the gym dance floor back to underneath the basketball rim to be with my friends who all watched that event. So that was traumatic for me, and that is in no comparison to what this woman went through. And yet you have these guys saying, "Well, maybe you had it wrong. It wasn't him." How demeaning is that?
Well, you know, they do not believe women's experiences. They do not believe women's truths. It's just that simple. They feel, and this is white male privilege, that it's okay to do what they do as long as they don't get caught in the act, because 35 years later it doesn't really matter. But they don't take sexual violence seriously whatsoever. Look, you know, he mimicked Trump yesterday in terms of his response. We have a groper in chief, a man who 19 women have come forward to say he is sexually abused. And he's the one who, you know, Trump is the one who's nominating this guy. It's all part of that frat boy kind of culture that they still are living in. They're not 18 anymore. They're in their 50s. He's in his 70s, but they're still living that value. They're still living that dream.
Well, he found himself in the perfect environment.
Yeah.
Because they were just older frat boys.
So if David's going to make a pop culture reference, I think I need to, too.
Okay, good.
I've said this before, and I'm 100% serious about it. There's a band called Proto Martyr. And on their last album, they have a song called Male Plague. And in 3 minutes, they say everything you need to know about what's happening now. It is by far the boldest, most political statement of any punk band probably in the past 10 years, and they nail it in less than 3 minutes.
I hope we have that as a bumper song.
Yeah.
There's no swear words, but
are you sure?
I heard that song.
Are you sure?
It hit me hard.
All right. From Detroit. Yeah. From Detroit. All right. Linda writes, I saw Kavanaugh's angry, indignant approaches completely calculated to give Republican senators cover for a vote to confirm him. He was wronged. John says, all straight men are rapists? ? Gee, I never knew all straight men are one drink away from being rapists. That's what's now being said over and over about you hetero guys. So what are you going to do about it? Are you just going to sit there and take it?
Hey, John, thank you for completely misunderstanding or purposefully or intentionally misunderstanding everything that's being said. You just continue to stay within your tribe. Rah, rah.
Male plague.
Yeah.
Contrast. Jerry says, it seemed to make a big difference listening on the radio opposed to watching on TV. Over the radio, you cannot see the nervousness of Dr. Ford, how she was obviously very uncomfortable with the situation she was in. For Judge Kavanaugh, listening, you could not see the full extent of his unhinged temperament and anger, but you could sure hear it. And what was with the tongue-in-cheek thing, I'm just saying it seemed like his tell when not being truthful.
I think it was to not cry. Yeah. I think the tongue-in-the-cheek thing was to keep him from totally breaking down.
Yep, and he took 8,000 drinks of water.
Right, and that's why there were so many breaks.
So many breaks.
Who else used to take a lot of drinks of water on the campaign trail?
Who?
President Trump. Remember they always had the thing with the glass, and then when he would take the little sips? Do you remember that?
Well, I was thinking
nobody gets that reference?
It's because of his little hands.
Now, you've been listening to too much proto-martyr. Nobody gets my...
Hey, I don't want to. I just want to say that I don't listen to Spandau Ballet
anymore.
My credibility is shot.
Anymore.
I'm sorry. That was the song that was playing.
Man, I made my move during Spandau Ballet. Never again.
All right, let's take a break. Because I think we all need one. Yes. And we'll be back after this.
Sur mes cahiers d'écolier, sur mon pupitre et les arbres, sur le sable, sur la neige, j'écris ton nom. Sur toutes les pages lues, sur toutes les pages blanches, pierre sans papier ou cendre, j'écris ton nom. Sur les images dorées, sur les armes des guerriers, sur la couronne des rois, j'écris ton nom. Sur la jungle et le désert, sur les nids, sur les genêts, sur l'écho de mon enfance, j'écris ton nom. J'écris ton nom. Sur les merveilles des nuits, sur le pain blanc des journées, sur les saisons fiancées, j'écris ton nom.
Mark Judge. Kavanaugh completely flubbed that question. To me, the fact that he never answered whether he would like Mark's presence at the hearing sunk his testimony early on. Also, constantly referring to yourself as an athlete who are known for particularly entitled, especially in academic situations, was also very telling of his privileged view of himself. He appeared like an older Brock Turner. Not the first time I've heard that, but a letter from Kiana as we start off the our last segment before the break in the roundtable this morning.
Clarify who Brock Turner was or is?
Brock, does anybody want to help me with this?
Yeah, he's a...
Who's the kid?
He was an elite athlete, right, who...
was a Penn... No,
it was out in California.
Stanford.
Okay.
He raped an unconscious woman
behind a dumpster.
Yeah, garbage tip. Right.
And then he claimed some sort of privilege defense around it. And then also, after he was convicted, I think he came back or sentenced or whatever the plea deal was. He came back and then tried to like have that undone or sealed in some way. Just the epitome of white privilege.
Joe says, for me, the most striking contrast between Kavanaugh's arrogance and Ford's humility was the moment when Dr. Ford, with two master's degrees and a PhD, had no problem admitting that she did not know the meaning of exculpatory. With no hesitation at all, she asked for the meaning of this word. She was honest and natural, while he was at times raging and incoherent.
I love the fact that she could talk to the biology of all of it.
Well, I know. She had a couple words there I had to look up. Yeah. I was like, I don't know.
I
felt like really stupid, and then Nina Totenberg came on and said that she had to look it up, and I felt a little bit better. Daisy said, so glad you all are here. That man played pure calculation and spoke to his base in Trump. It was craven. It was disgusting. He knows that he did it. You don't get that kind of rage unless you're guilty. Well, I don't know. Well, anyway. But thank you, Dr. Ford. I wish I could give you a hug. I'm sure there are a lot of people that feel that way this morning. Good morning. The question is for Mr. Soares. Get ready, David.
Yes.
Wake up.
Take the take Spandau Ballet out of your headphones there. And these six background checks of are you checking out the new? Okay,
it brought it all back.
You need to get over it, honey. Yeah. It's
proto?
Proto martyr.
Yeah, that's what you got to put into your playlist.
Yeah.
From Urinal Cake Records, I just learned.
Urinal Cake Records.
I thought it was hardly art.
I don't know. I'll look it up. That's what came up when I just Googled it, and I was flagged by HR. these six background checks of Kavanaugh, did they miss his high school and college drinking behavior? That much seems to have happened, or do they not go back that far, or did they ignore it?
First of all, when you're having a background check done, and I've certainly, I have responded to many, your name is given. It's put on a list. It's almost like you putting your list of references, because you're surely not going to put amongst your references people that have fired you or people who you've had arguments with. And so the FBI, and they do a very thorough, you know, background, but they're looking for very specific things and people who can attest to character. Now, had the FBI been in possession of information about a possible sexual assault, they would have inquired into that as well. They would not have, you know, been inquiring into it with the idea that they would hopefully, you know, put a case together to build a case, but they would have least spoken to, you know, a whole host of people that would have been present at that time to provide, you know, better information for the people who are making these decisions. But understand that the people who are making these decisions don't want that. They don't want any information in that respect. What I found was the height of irony yesterday and hypocrisy was this idea that this had all been sprung upon them, that Ms. Feinstein had held on to this information and intentionally waited and then sprung this on them. We were here several weeks ago when late Friday, a Friday night, I think it might have been around 7 or 8 p.m., there were 47,000 pieces of paper that were sprung on the rest of the Democratic senators for a hearing that started on Monday.
2 points on it, because I was thinking exactly that. You're absolutely right. And that data dump that came the night before, actually in the middle of the morning.
It was a holiday.
Like 2 in the morning or something that they did it before the hearing. So I thought of that, and I also thought, well, all of that information that they wanted was in reference to his White House time in the White House, which he talked about endlessly yesterday. So to me, that brought that out of context. But also this idea of all of the male senators then, while realizing that the optics were bad, to go after Dr. Ford, instead victimized Dianne Feinstein and making her the evil one because she had sat on this for however long, when she made it clear, although I would argue maybe perhaps not clear enough initially, that it was not her. It was not her office that leaked the memo.
No, and she was keeping confidential information confidential until the rest of the process played itself out. So she, and another low moment for me was when she felt she had to apologize.
Yeah. I know. That's what I mean. I just, like, why?
Well, because she's socialized.
No,
she's
I understand.
She's a Democrat.
Democrat.
Right. And you know we do.
No, she's they socialized.
You know, that's
because I do it every day.
Yeah.
And it's embarrassing for me, too, because I'm a powerful law professor.
That's right. So no. My
favorite line this morning, I was listening to all the cable news shows, and I don't know which one she appeared on, but Pat Schroeder, God love her, was on, and she said, this idea. The Democrats were planning this in a strategy. She said, Democrats can't arrange a one-car parade, for God's sakes. They certainly couldn't arrange this.
Pat Schroeder said that?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. You know, I was like, God, I totally agree with you.
You know, there's a kind of a meta theme going on here. And this whole process, the circus that it has become, really calls into question the whole legitimacy of the nomination process, and ultimately will call into the legitimacy of the Supreme Court, because it's become so politicized, it's become so detached from any type of, you know, reasonable fact-based nominating strategy. And I mean, I think that's kind of a metaphor for where American politics is going too. And the Supreme Court's supposed to be this, you know, non-political, independent body. They have, you know, life term limits, and boy, this is just setting a bad precedent for what's going to happen down the road. And I think that's the scariest part. You know, it's not the document dump or, you know, the one-car parade thing. It's that this is fundamentally going to change the nature of one of the most important American democratic institutions, and that's the tragedy.
Yes.
The Senate Judiciary Committee is meeting now. We're getting word that some Democrats have walked out of the committee room, and it is believed that the vote will actually take place at 1:30 this afternoon. So we'll have more on that.
Too little too late as far as the Democrats are concerned.
I don't understand. What's the use of walking out now?
You know, everybody, okay, I'm tell a little bit about myself too. Yeah. So
I think you've already done
that.
Yeah,
I did. Yeah, that
opened that up. That's my credibility.
We were with you on the basketball court, right. David. Go ahead.
It's a safe space.
It's a safe space.
It's a sharing circle.
Right. No, it's, you know, as I'm driving around and everybody's pinning their hopes on this, you know, blue wave, and you're like, wait a minute. Yeah, okay, so November may be the blue wave, but the red wave has already struck the judiciary, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and the entirety of the judiciary. So, great, you might have a blue wave whose effects might last 2 more years, 4 years, but we're talking about the rest of our lifetime, you know? Although I'd like to say I believe I'm going to live a little bit longer than that, but this man gets into the Supreme Court, you know, he is going to be there helping to overturn every bit of progress for many people in this country.
Well, aren't you our little ray of sunshine?
Yes. I'm not the one that mentioned. What's the band?
Proto-Martyr.
Proto-Martyr.
I know no one in the band. I have no ties to the band. I think they are the only punk band who has anything. Male Plague.
Can we find Male Plague by Proto-Martyr and play it coming back? Okay, thank you, Mike.
Sure.
All right, we're going to give Ray,
thank you.
Ray has problems with this decision,
Ray's
but we'll see.
It's not Coltrane.
Hey, Ray, keep the news long. We got to find Proto-Martyr. We'll be right back after this. Proto-Martyr, yeah, Male Plague. I understood when they said Male Plague. What else were they saying? You made the control room very happy. You're playing punk on their radio station.
White men get
Wanda Fisher just quit. But anyway, go ahead.
Privileged white men get very upset when you call out their privilege. Yeah. Is what the song's about.
Okay,
and that is a disease that's hopefully we're starting to find a cure for lack of a better word, with the Me Too movement and women speaking out and hopefully gaining more positions of power. But it seems like the Male Plague is going to continue in the Kavanaugh case.
I really want to quickly, we have a ton of letters, and I want to get to one because John wrote in and we read it, and it seemed like, you know, email is hard sometimes, and I guess we read it wrong. He said, sorry for writing again, but you guys got my all straight men are rapists letter wrong. We gay men are constantly accused of being molesters. We fight it constantly. We don't put up with it. You straight men are now being tarred with an equivalent brush. You know and I know that normal men don't walk around wanting to assault women. It's time that you stand up and say this is not normal. That's the point of that letter.
Okay, thank you for clarifying that.
Thank you. And we appreciate you writing back. It's hard when we're reading these things on the fly to understand the context sometimes.
Well, it's always hard in the email to understand context.
I know. All right, Fran writes, Libby, why should Dr. Ford have a stronger, bigger voice? Are you suggesting that a woman with a soft-toned voice is less believable? A more man-like voice? A strong voice? A woman, regardless of voice quality, should be listened to? And those yearbook entries happened in rural America as well. It's not just white male privilege. It's boys becoming men.
Thank you, Fran.
Did she say Boys to Men? Because
That was the group you went to after Spandau Ballet.
I don't think this is just an issue in prep schools. I think this is an issue in high schools across the nation.
I think it's an issue. I think it's an issue with men. Period.
Yes. Yeah, but the point, I mean, put words in your mouth, but I mean, we were talking about white privilege and elitism, right?
Yeah, I mean, but that's absolutely right. I mean, I'm not going to say there weren't some entries in there from some boys that I now recognize as innuendo and inappropriateness, and that I didn't remember some things from high school that happened in my rural Midwestern neighborhood that were not okay. But I think it was just the contrast. I think the point that I was trying to make also is that we're sort of, it's the constant gaslighting of women in America. Mm-hmm. Where it's on the news so much and so constantly that you have to refresh your own memory just to make sure that you're remembering things correctly.
Well, and again, you know, men came forward about being abused by the church 30 years ago. Everybody believes it. A woman comes forward about being abused by a white male who's got privilege, nobody wants to believe it.
Because it's reduced and normalized to things mm-hmm. like locker room talk.
Right.
Like, really?
But it also goes to John's letter that, you know, male-on-male sex, gay men are predators. That's the line that's followed there, and which then says all gay people are predators and all gay people are sick. You know, but, you know, it's true, though. I mean, I'm not trying to minimize what happened to anybody who was abused by anyone in the church. Not at all. But why aren't women who come forward believed? Why?
Well, I mean, I agree with you. I understand. Although I would also say that a lot of those young boys and a lot of kids just aren't believed when they do tell their story.
I can attest to that. When I was a young reporter back in the early 80s, I had people call me who were victims of, mm-hmm. of priest abuse, and I just could not believe that would actually happen, and I didn't do those stories.
Right. Well, but there is now a groundswell where people do believe those
stories. Well, that's right. But, I mean, I think it took that. I understand your point. I'm not debating your point.
Yeah. The thing is, women have been telling their truth for generations, for eons, for centuries, and we're still not believing.
Well, I think we should also remember that you know, the reason why we have more acceptance today and more of these cases come forward and there's a much more of a comfort level in coming forward with allegations of abuse is because there are courageous few who blaze that trail. Mm-hmm. You know, like the good doctor who we saw providing testimony yesterday. I mean, this idea that she's doing this for anything is just absurd. You go from waking up in the morning and taking care of your family, going for a run, living your, you know, very peaceful life, to all of a sudden being thrust in front of the cameras for all the world to see. That's not something that anyone volunteers for.
Right. Absolutely.
We have a ton of letters, and we've got about 10 minutes, so we'll go to as many as we can. Richard writes, Senator Feinstein should explain this in the simplest words possible, the reasons for her waiting until she did to disclose the allegations by Dr. Ford. Throughout the day's hearing, her decision was attacked by nearly every Republican senator. I heard no explanation offered by Feinstein or her Democratic colleagues. Perhaps it was simply a matter of poor communication on the part of the Democratic caucus. Richard, she did come. She asked for a moment, and she did defend her office and her decision and explained it. I would agree with you, though. I wondered why it didn't come sooner. But
the woman didn't want to go public.
And she didn't want the rest of the committee to know either.
No, right? I understand that, but I mean, as far as Senator Feinstein, she waited until the end of the hearing to kind of combat doing it up front at the beginning when the accusations were first made.
I thought the woman, Rachel, whatever her name was, the prosecutor, trying to make Feinstein complicit of, you know, did anybody from Feinstein's office recommend a lawyer for you? You know, all that kind of line of questioning was really pretty disgusting.
Yes, she tried, but I thought that the prosecutor actually helped because, you know, she was coming back, she was responding with her truth, and she was so credible.
Right. So, Rachel Mitchell, I think I know the answer to this, but I'm curious as to the, for the two lawyers in the room, why did Republican senators give up on her so quickly when it came to the questioning of Brett Kavanaugh? She did the first two and then done.
They didn't trust her to be able to handle it.
She didn't do what she needed to do with her, with the doctor.
Right.
She didn't undermine her credibility.
But I mean, they did. She did too. They came back because a lot of people were wondering whether she would come back at all. Then she did, and then she questioned on behalf of, I believe, two senators. Mm-hmm. They took a 5-minute break, and she came back, and then she was done.
Well, and here's the other thing: you saw increasingly the senators not asking questions.
Oh no!
Apologizing. Right. For what Kavanaugh was going through and giving soliloquies about how awful it must be for him, because that's part of the strategy too, is to paint him mm-hmm. as a victim.
Right.
The "will you swear to God" part was really quite gut-wrenching to me.
Well, I tell you, that's all. Yeah, but everybody who comes and just tells the truth. I mean, just, if you believe in God, when you're asked the question, you're going to tell the truth. Thank you so much, Senator Kennedy. Thank you so much.
I thought Mitchell was just asking Kavanaugh too many questions. They didn't want him to be asked questions.
That was the worst. But to end it that way, which I believe was staged. You know, listen, Senator Kennedy, we're going to go to you at the very end,
yeah.
and we want you to put a. You're going to close the show. What are you going to ask? That's brilliant. Thank you.
You know, from a for an African American from an asshole country who grew up in Providence, Rhode Island, that's a damn good Southern accent.
He's been around.
Yeah, man. Christopher writes, "Unfortunately, Judge Kavanaugh showed his true colors as a political hack. He has stated his political orientation in berating Democrats. Can America afford to have a Supreme Court justice who may try to rule against Democratic positions regardless of merit?"
Well, that was the point I was making about politicizing the Supreme Court, and then how it totally undermines the whole impartial nature of one of the most important democratic institutions of the country. And that has been Trump's goal from the beginning, maybe not his goal specifically, but the goal of a lot of his senior advisors like Bannon, or former senior advisors. Mm-hmm. That's the goal, is to dismantle democratic institutions so that the country can be run by
oligarchs.
Yeah. A kleptocratic plutocracy.
Right.
I do not want to play any board games with him.
No.
Why?
Scrabble? Oh, yeah. He can mess you up. Yeah. Plutocracy. How many points?
39.
Brucey.
Oh, you know, huh?
Brucey writes in the I'm learning so much about all of you this morning. Brucey writes in the Marvel movies, they talk about Dr. Banner versus his Hulk persona, and they call Hulk the rage monster, and that's what I think we saw yesterday. Defending yourself is one thing, but above reproach should be standard for the Supreme Court of the United States. I hope this era is short, but one way or the other will be known in the history books as the debasement of U.S. institutions era. Yeah. Judy writes, even before the recent allegations, I do not think the judge had the temperament and character for an appointment to the court. I watched or listened to the complete hearing and have concluded that even if he were completely innocent of Ford's accusation, he is not fit for the Supreme Court. I'm not even taking a side on the assault. There was no investigation to draw a conclusion from. What I'm against is the disgusting double standards, obvious bias in his judging, and general elite chauvinism. Rather than opening doors his silver spoon unlocked for himself, he found ways to keep women under him, be it his coaching, employment, or persistent phone calls since high school with women. He literally used every single one of them to bolster himself by being able to control them in one way or another and take credit for their success.
You have to understand that when he started that part of his testimony, It's the same thing I've heard 1,000 years, you know, for 1,000 years. I'm not a racist. I have Jim with a black guy.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not a sexist. You know how many interns I have clerking for me?
How many women I've helped?
Yeah. Binders full of women.
Right.
Nice reference. Kevin says, question for David. How many times have you seen a witness turn the question being asked of them around and the person asking it? I think this is in regards to Senator Klobuchar. He can get away with it. He can get away with it due to the 5-minute time limits.
Well, you know, if it's a trial, you definitely want to allow for, you want to let that defendant, right, go at you that way, because you want to demonstrate to this jury of just how unhinged this person is and how very little impulse control that they have. I mean, you'll allow it for a few minutes, and then you'll kindly ask the judge to instruct, you know, the witness to answer the question. But I thought when he was losing control, I thought that he was just going down in flames.
Yeah.
Anonymous writes, without singling out anyone in particular, by identifying only with women survivors of sexual assault and forgetting completely or blithely mentioning male survivors of the same is an invalidation of the emotional scarring, PTSD, and short and long-term effects of the assault on our lives. We share the same existence as our sisters. We are all fighting the same monster. On behalf of male survivors everywhere in the future, don't treat male survivors of sexual assault as an afterthought. Greg writes, the judge mentioned that the woman who hosted the party in question has no recollection of ever meeting or knowing him. How is that not a significant pointer to his innocence?
As somebody who's had a lot of parties, I don't know a lot of people who come to my parties.
In high school?
Yeah.
Man, you have a party and 40 it's like years you're going to get friends you've never known you even had. They're going to come from all over the place.
Eighth degree friends showing up.
Yeah. And let's not forget, if he blacked out, he's not going to remember.
That's right.
So, continue.
No, I'm just trying to think of
a high school with a guest list. High school party with a guest list.
Well, my parents made me have a guest list.
Your parents?
Will. No.
Did you have,
I mean, I was...
Members of the UN.
Huh? Members of the UN. Nice boys, nice girls, quiet.
Richard writes, wondering why nobody asked for Kavanaugh's calendars entries to be corroborated by an FBI investigation, Seeing a panelist rip them apart would have been a powerful image. I did think it was interesting that Judge Kavanaugh was making a point of, sure, you know, if you want to go after my yearbook, here are the calendars that I wrote when I was in 11th grade.
Who saves those?
Because my dad did it.
You
attacked me on my calendars. You were attacking my dad.
Okay. Mary says, good morning, panel.
I'm just trying to picture what my mom would have said to me. Ma, you got my calendar from... from like
30 years ago,
1986, Ma, I'd have to duck.
Right. They would have all been thrown out when my mother moved to Florida.
Mary writes, just wondered what your thoughts were on why Kavanaugh was so emotional whilst giving his statement. It was completely bizarre.
He was melting down.
Yeah, he was watching everything that he thought that he was entitled to fall apart.
And I also think that he did watch her.
Yeah, no, that's coming out.
He did watch her, and I think he was so furious of how well she did, but what she said about him, that's why he was so over the top. Oh, here we go.
What?
Next one.
Oh, okay, yeah. Oh, because it's about you. Yeah. Right. Okay, I get it. Eugene says, I find Libby's negative comments about the culture of Jesuit schools very offensive and extremely biased. I'm a graduate of one, never experienced the type of behavior and language exhibited by Kavanaugh and his friends, just the opposite. I would agree with Gene on this, but...
I'm thankful that he went to one where it wasn't like that.
Well, I don't think it... Well, all right.
That's okay. It's probably not across the board, but we do have it at Georgetown Prep.
Prep schools, regardless of what their affiliation is, right? I mean, there's a lot of non-Jesuit prep schools where very similar problems have occurred.
Yes.
Okay. John writes, all I can say is, wow, where is the dialogue on what due process is required from the lawyers on this panel? Ford offered nothing, and I mean nothing by way of collaborating evidence. Witnesses said no, it didn't happen. She herself can't remember how old she was or where it happened. Kavanaugh's anger is normal for when anyone is falsely accused, which is exactly the tone the judge gave. Arrogance? Question mark. Not present. Also, just who do you think blew Ford's cover? The Democrats, of course, at the expense of Ford.
Yeah, come on, dude. Testimony is evidence, okay? And by the way, if what you really wanted were facts and corroborating material, then just have the FBI look into it.
Right.
All right?
Yeah, that's if you or not. I mean, so if you want to talk about due process, what due process is afforded to victims when they do come out, when they do tell their story? It's a problem in our justice system. And this is a job interview. This wasn't a trial. And I actually found it offensive that he ended with, you know, I'm innocent of these. I mean... No one, that's not what it's about. It's about whether or not you get to have one of the best jobs in the country that thousands of lawyers admire and look up to and work hard for. And not only that, that you're better than the dozens of other qualified candidates out there. And that's just not there at all? Why do we have to go after a victim in order to bolster this guy this position?
And you know what, John, you want some corroborating evidence? Go ahead and look at his own at Kavanaugh's yearbook. You'll find some corroborating evidence that speaks to the culture of the institution and the school and that environment at the time. You want more corroborating evidence? Listen to Kavanaugh's testimony about his alcohol consumption and the number of times he said beer. And in closing, this is the only thing I have to say. I feel really bad for Coca-Cola because Coca-Cola was dragged into the Anita Hill hearing. You remember Clarence Thomas cocaine? Yeah. And yesterday, as the victim is testifying, big old bottle of Coke. Mm-hmm. Feel bad for Coke.
You know, and I don't want to alienate John entirely, but, I mean, the point has to be raised that the story was leaked. Somebody did leak this. I mean, somebody purposely leaked this to, I think, initially the Daily Beast. So somebody knew that this story was out there and did want to get it out. Now, Dianne Feinstein said it wasn't her, but we can't deny that it was leaked.
No, and the end story, whether it be true or not, the end story was that she had told a couple of friends, and they believed that that was possibly how it was is leaked. But we not sure. All right. I want to thank you all very much for being here and for helping us figure out what happened yesterday and what will be happening over the next several days. Libby, Sarah, we'll see you on Monday morning. Judy and Aaron and David, thank you very much for your participation. We'll be back right after this.